a number of our regulars are not available this evening because they have VOD or they're traveling. So we are discussing the history of the revelation. Many of the questions that Jerry and Herb that you asked last week, we're going to address tonight. Okay, so we begin. Let's see, where do we begin here? That's what I'm looking for. Amazing how much there is here. Okay, so the first, I actually found the first piece quite fascinating. The first piece comes from Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, the Kuzari. So he says something really fascinating, and I'll just tell it to you, it's short. The Kuzari spends a lot of time, those of you that have ever studied the Kuzari, you're familiar with this, but he spends quite a bit of time comparing Judaism and other religions, specifically Islam and Christianity. And he does that because he's having this conversation with the Khazar king, who's interested in finding out what does it mean to be Jewish. And that's the framework of the Sefer, of the Kuzari. So there in the first essay, it's paragraph number 81, the English translation reads like this. Only rational creeds that are developed by human minds are formed in a gradual process. Then, once the founder succeeds, he claims that he was aided by the creator, that he was taught by a god or something like that, you know, divine inspiration. But the religion that originated genuinely from God, read that sentence again, the religion that originated genuinely from God arose instantaneously. God said, let it be, and it became. Just like the creation of the universe. So he uses that analogy. We don't have to go there. In other words, what he's saying is, the way I understand what he's saying is that religions, human religions, or religions that we understand to have been developed by people, whether it was Jesus or Muhammad or the disciples, whoever it might be, they were all gradual processes that took sometimes even generations to develop. And so the religion as it is today is something, I don't want to say it like that. The religion that if you were to look in a book and you were to, look up the definition of the religion and you would look at it, that's something that took a number of years to fully develop. As opposed to, let's say, Judaism, which is completely divine. And when I say completely divine, it means that the religion is divine. Obviously, there's rabbinic authority, rabbinic elements. I'm not talking about that. But we're just talking about the Torah itself. It's the basic framework of the religion, 613 mitzvahs. That all came into being instantaneously. Even that's not a great way to say it. That was all given to the people, so that the religion became a religion instantaneously. The Torah itself, we talked about this before, but the Torah itself predates creation. Now, what does that mean exactly? I don't know. Okay, I once gave a metaphor for this concept. Maybe some of you remember it. It says a few different things about the Torah itself. The Torah itself predates creation. The Torah itself is the blueprint of creation. The Torah itself is God's name. So there's 600,000 marks. So that, not letters, but marks that are the 600,000 letters of God's name. So of course, the Torah is the Torah that we read in shul, that we have, that we can access, and it gives us instruction. So what does that mean exactly? So this is just a bit of a tangent. So the way I understand that is that if you were to take a, here we go. Anybody, can you see what this is? What is this?
What is that?
It's a placemat. Okay? It happens to be sitting here on the table. A placemat, yeah. Okay? A fleshig one. Okay? So, or you could say no, it's a rectangle, right? Can you say that? Mm-hmm. Now you would say it's a square. Well, not quite, but okay. You get the point. Now you would say it's a triangle. Right? Or a ball of some sort. Not a very good ball, but a ball of some sort, right? Mm-hmm. So what is it? Is it a triangle, a rectangle, a square?
I think it depends on your perception.
The answer is it's a placemat. Right? But it's a placemat. But obviously, exactly like Rosanna just said, it depends on your perception. What does that mean? It depends on your perception. That means that the Torah is all those things. It depends on who's looking at it and what perspective and with what sort of vision you're looking at it. Those would all determine. So how are you going to describe it? So yeah, the Torah predates creation, but obviously from our perspective, the Torah is limited to what we can see, what we can read. So, but that's just a tangent. What is Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and the Kuzari saying over here about Judaism? He's saying that this new religion, this new way of life, was given to Moshe and to the Jewish people instantaneously, all at once, which is a neat concept. And again, if you're going to do a study of comparative religion, there is no other religion that is that could really that makes such a claim. Okay. All right. So we're really that's just kind of the last point. Maybe we could have made it already last week when we talked about Har Sinai and what was done at Har Sinai. What I want to talk about tonight is the 40 years in the desert. Depending on how time goes and how much energy I have, we'll talk about Sefer Devarim as well, the book of Deuteronomy, the fifth book of the Torah. Jerry last week was very curious about the language that's used, especially in Devarim, where Moshe Rabbeinu's voice changes. In the four books, or I guess in the second, third, and fourth book, when Moshe speaks, he speaks as if he's God in the first person. Right, Jerry? He says, like I commanded you. In the fifth book, Moshe says, like Hashem commanded you. There's going to be a difference between the four books and the fifth book, and we'll see what that is. Okay. Last week, Herb was very, very interested about the what was written down when. I think it was you, maybe it was Jerry as well. What was written down when and how that all works together. So let's take a look at that. So the Jews, we know, were in the desert for 40 years. The entire Torah was revealed to the Jewish people in the form of the Ten Commandments. We talked about that last week. It was further revealed in all its detail to Moshe when he went up Mount Sinai for 40 days. We talked about that last week as well. But the actual text, and here's new information, the actual text of the written Torah was given to Moshe in two intervals. We'll see this is actually a machlokes, is a disagreement about this. But let's see. So there's the text of the written Moshe given at two intervals. The first part was given during the year after the Exodus, and the rest was given to him shortly before Israel crossed the Jordan at the end of the 40 years in the desert. So for 38 years in between, there was a hiatus of 38 years during which no portion of the Torah was written Torah was given. One of the highlights of our trip this past summer, we still don't know if we could make a trip to Israel this summer, right? Nobody knows that yet. One of the highlights of our trip to Israel this past summer when I went with Rifki was we went to a place called Mitzpeh Yericho. Mitzpeh Yericho overlooks the, if you look south on your right, if you're looking east and you turn to your right, so you're looking south, you'll see obviously the Dead Sea and the Yam HaMelech. And if you look directly east, there's a desert there, and there are mountains there, and that's Jordan. So, but it's also Harei Moav. It's the mountains of Moav, and that's where the Jewish people crossed from there into the land of Israel, into Eretz Israel, somewhere around there. So during the 38 years, during which no portion of written Torah was given. So the first year there was a portion of the written Torah, we talked about that last week, and Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down everything until Matan Torah. We talked about that last week. Kasav Sefer Torah, something like that. We saw that last week, that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down from Bereishis all the way until somewhere in Yisro. And then the rest of the Torah was written at the end. But we'll see that that's not so simple. Not so simple. Let's see. I'm going to share my screen for a moment so you can look at a pasuk together with me. If you look in Bamidbar, which is Numbers, chapter 7, verse 89. Hey, guys. Sorry, Bracha. You can talk, but just softly, okay? So if you look at Numbers 7, 89, it's a very long parak, wow. Okay? Maybe it means 8 to 9.
It must be Nasa.
Yeah, well. Okay.
Sorry, what did Joel say?
Joel said it's from Parshas Nasa, the longest parsha in the Torah. Maybe that's right. Okay. Yeah. So there it says that whenever Moshe came into the Ohel Moed to speak with Hashem, he would hear the voice speaking to him from above the cover that was upon the Ark of Testimony between the two cherubs. And God thus spoke to him. Let me read in Hebrew. Bevo Moshe El Ohel Moed, the Daber Ito, when Moshe came to the Ohel Moed, the tent of meeting, to speak with Hashem. Vayishma Sakol, he's heard the voice, the Daber Elav speaking to him. Me'alak Aporis, where was it coming out of? Where was the speaker, Kaviyachol, in the Ohel Moed? It was on top of the Aron, above the Ark, from between the two Keruvim. Hashem spoke to him. So Rashi says, Vayishma Sakol, what does it mean that he heard the voice? Okay, Rashi is bothered. Again, whenever you learn Rashi in Chumash, Rashi is one of the principal commentaries on the Chumash. So yeah, Rashi is bothered by a question which he's coming to address. I think here Rashi is bothered by why does it say Vayishma Sakol, why that he and he heard the voice. I mean, obviously, we should, let it just say that Hashem spoke to Moshe. What does Vayishma Sakol mean? I might have thought that the voice was quiet. The Torah therefore writes Hakol. It's like the hey hayidia, it's called in Torah terminology. The hey hayidia is the letter hey, which means the, like a capital T, like which is a referring to a specific object. Hakol, the voice. Which voice? Hakol shenadaber ima b'Sinai, the voice that spoke with him at Sinai. But nobody was able to hear it outside the tent. It was just there for him. Now, why was it like that? Why did Hashem specifically share the teachings at that moment in the same voice that he shared the teaching at Har Sinai? What was the purpose of that? So Rashi isn't so explicit, but it seems to me that the reason is fairly obvious. And that's simply this, that it has the same quality. The quality of Torah, the quality of Hashem teaching at Har Sinai and in the Ohel Moed are the same. Just totally as an aside, the Ramban writes, I think it's in Parshas Truma, I don't have it in my notes here, but the Ramban writes in Parshas Truma that the Mishkan, once the Mishkan was built, which is different than the Ohel Moed. I mean, the Ohel Moed may or may not have been part of the Mishkan, depending on when during different parts of history. But the Mishkan, which is where the Aron was at the time that it was there, the Mishkan itself was built in such a way that it's meant to reflect Mount Sinai, meant to reflect Har Sinai. That's a very worthwhile study. Maybe we'll talk about it before Shavuos. And that way when Hashem taught Moshe Rabbeinu the Torah at the Ohel Moed, he did so in such a way that it was a continuation of Sinai. So what do you see from here, the bottom line? That the revelation continues in the Tent of Meeting. The revelation wasn't a one-time event during, you know, the giving of the Torah at Sinai and the 40 days following. But no, it was actually while the Jews were in the desert as well, that God would call Moshe to the Ohel Moed. God and Moshe had this very special, unique relationship where Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest prophet of all time. He could speak conversationally with Hashem. He was always ready to go, always ready to be there to have a conversation with Hashem. So Hashem would tell Moshe to go to the Ohel Moed, and there he would dictate Torah to him. So God dictated each passage of the Torah to Moshe. Moshe repeated it aloud before writing it down. There is some disagreement, though, about this last statement about when he actually wrote the Torah down. And here we have a Gemara in Gittin, which I'll share with you so you can look at it inside. By the way, if anybody wants my notes, I'm more than happy to share my notes over here. Okay, let's take a look at this Gemara. The Gemara here is in Gittin, on Daf Samach Amud Aleph, 60a. I prefer to read in Hebrew. If you can read along in English, if you prefer the English, and just tune me out. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishim Rabbi Binah. So here we actually have an argument, we have machlokas. So Rabbi Yochanan taught in the name of Rabbi Menah. Torah. The Torah itself, Megillah, Megillah, Nitna. What does that mean? That means that the Torah was given to Moshe, or to the people, in written form, piecemeal, in separate scrolls. The word Megillah means a scroll. Kishenemer parshal to Moshe, every time Moshe was taught a part of the Torah, Hayakosva, he would write it down. Well, the Sof Men Shana, after 40 years, this is Rashi's explanation here. Kishenigmeru kol parshios, when every parsha was completed, Chibron Begidin, he tied them together using the special sinew, thread, the tufron, and he sewed them together. Shenemar, and he quotes a verse in Tehillim. Okay? So that's the first opinion. So according to the first opinion, how was the Torah given to Moshe himself? Talk about the history of the Torah. So here we have this interesting concept that not only was Moshe Rabbeinu taught laws and mitzvot and all the concepts and the explanations, etc. of them, but more than that, Moshe Rabbeinu actually was instructed to write things down, and he did. He wrote them down. When did he write them down? Every time he learned something. You know how in our Torah we have Parshios, Bereshis, Noach, Lech Lecha. In the Torah itself, it's not really how it's split up. The Torah itself, the way the Torah is split up is with Parshios, which are called Tuchot and Stumot. So if you love those of you that have seen the Tikkun, Zach knows exactly what I'm speaking about over here. If you've ever seen a Tikkun, so there's like a small pei or a Samach. So a pei is like Tuchat, open Parsha. A Samach is Stuma, is a closed Parsha. And every one of our Parshios has many of those in them. You're probably familiar that chapters and verses are not Jewish inventions. They're very handy. It's wonderful to have. But Joel, who are the ones that created those?
Greeks.
I was going to say the Christians. Okay. Did they do it for the Septuagint? Maybe, I don't know. Okay. But
here's a Tikkun.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Here.
But the chapters and verses itself. Thank you, Joel. Were not written by Moshe. Rather, they were verses. Let me rephrase that. They were verses, but there was no chapters. Meaning, every pasuk has a sof pasuk. Right, where the trup comes from Moshe. But so when I say chapter and verse, I mean that it wasn't like we have nowadays where, where we have a chapter. Or we have chapter and verse the way we have it. Certainly the psukim were came from Moshe, but dividing them into parshios, parakim were chapters that came from a non-Jewish source. Okay? In a moment, I'm going to mute everybody. Some people are complaining of feedback. And I'll ask you to do is, if you want to speak, you can do so easily by pressing on the space bar. And Zach and Ilan, if you want to say something, just raise your hand and I'll unmute you. Okay, I'll do it. I can do that. Here we have a second opinion. Rav Shimon ben Lakish, known as Rish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Shimon ben Lakish were brothers-in-law, colleagues, best friends, chavrusas, and they often argue with each other. Okay? What do you see from there? That it's okay to have a disagreement with a friend, right? So what does Rav Shimon ben Lakish say? Torah chatuma nitna. The Torah was given in complete form. Lo nichteva atzof mem. So here's the Rashi. Nothing was written down until all the passages. After 40 years, lachar shenem rekol haparshios kulam. Vanemes lo b'shana rishona v'shniha yisturos lo alpeh atchekosfan. Everything was part of an oral Torah until he actually wrote it down. Shenemar lekuach ha-sefer ha-Torah hazos. So, as it says all the way in the end of Devarim, take this book of the Torah, where he's saying that is when he put it all together. Not just put it all together, but that's when he actually wrote everything down. This is according to Rabbi Yochanan. So again, you have this disagreement between the two as to when it was. So if you ask me, when was the Torah written down? It's Machlokas Amarayim. Rabbi Yochanan says it was written down piecemeal. Rish Lakish says it was written down all together at the same time. And until that point in time, there was nothing written down. maybe nothing written down, but certainly not written down in the way that we have it written down nowadays. This passage it seems to suggest, at least according to Rav Shimon Lakish, Moshe did not write any of the Torah until the last day of his life. What's the obvious problem with this, with this opinion, guys? We already mentioned, I actually made reference to it this evening, we already mentioned that even before the revelation at Sinai, Moshe wrote down everything from Bereishis all the way until Matan Torah. So this would seem that that would seem to accord only with the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan and not Reish Lakish. Everyone follow the question? Did you get it? Give me a thumbs up if you got it with the reaction button. Okay. I'll repeat the question one more time. There's another pasuk. I'm going to see if I could find it easily. I'm going to see if I could find it easily here. From my notes from last week. If you give me a moment here. I'll read you the verse in a moment, okay? Actually, it might be in part one, but let's take a look. Yeah, maybe it's in part one. Hold on. There we had a pasuk that told us. Let's see if I could find it quickly. Hold on a second. Here we go. Here we go. Okay, you ready? I'll show it to you right now. Okay, so this is in, this is found in, here we go, let's see. Here we go. 1 second. Sorry, I had it a second ago. But if you look at inside, though, I think it will help you see what I'm saying. So this is Shemos 24, 1 through 4. So here it says, Vel Moshe Amar, this is before the revelation. I mean, it's technically written after the revelation, but it's speaking about before the revelation. Vel Moshe Amar, Aleh Hashem, Atav Aaron, another of you, Vishim Zikne Yisrael, Vishachavisa Mirachav. So Moshe told Hashem, go up to the mountain, to Hashem. You together with Aaron, Nadav, and Avihu, etc. There it says, "Vayichtav Moshe is called Devarat Tarazos." Moshe wrote down this whole Torah. Mibereishis ve'ad Matan Torah, from Bereishis until Matan Torah. V'kasav mitzvos shenisavu b'mora, and there he wrote down the mitzvos that he got that were given at Mora. So, what does this pasuk say over here? It says very clearly, Moshe wrote down, at least according to the Rashi, Moshe wrote down exactly what it says in the Torah. Until that point in time. So if that's the case, so then how does that jive with what we're saying over here? That at least according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that, according to Reish Lakish, who says that, according to Reish Lakish, Moshe did not write any of the Torah, okay? According to Reish Lakish, Moshe Rabbeinu did not write any of the Torah until the last day of his life. So the two don't fit together. So that's the question. Now that it's a little more clear, perhaps? how these two, what the question is being asked is? Okay, good. So what's the answer? So let's take a look at a famous commentary, famous commentator, Rabbi Shlomo ben Aderet. Shlomo ben Aderet was known as the Rashba. That's the acronym of his name, Shlomo ben Aderet, or Rav Shlomo ben Aderet. And his commentary in the Gemara in Gittin tries to put these two Gemaras together. He says like this, it's possible that even Rabbi Shlomo ben Lakish meant only that Moshe did not write down each passage when it was told to him, rather memorize them until the Torah was complete. However, if a certain passage needed to be written down for some temporary purpose, he did write it earlier. That way people could see the written words and study them. According to the Rashba, what that means is that there was a part of Torah that was written down even before the revelation, except that that part, in a sense, is not binding. What does that mean that part's not binding? That was just kind of like Moshe's notes, but it wasn't part of what would ultimately become the Torah. That, according to Reish Lakish, is not actually, when I say, by the way, I say Reish Lakish, Rabbi Shimon Ben Lakish, it's the same person. That wasn't actually written down until the last day of Moshe's life. But what's really, really fascinating here is that one way or another, whether Moshe initially wrote things down during the first year, or whether he only wrote things at the end of his life, there's definitely a 38-year hiatus. Everyone agrees with that. There's definitely a 38-year hiatus. So what's going on? Why is that? Again, I invite you to unmute yourself very easily by pressing the space bar if you want to say anything, okay? So what happened a year after the Exodus from Egypt? The Jewish people sent spies. Story of the Meraglim. The story of the Meraglim is, I don't want to say the worst story. There's so many bad stories in our history. But the story of the Meraglim is one of the worst stories in our history. What's the big deal? They just sent spies, right? So it's more of a Tisha B'Av kind of a comment. But the idea being that the Jewish people cried in reaction to them. And Chazal tell us that Hashem says to them, you cried for nothing, I'll make you cry in the future. Basically everything bad that ever happened to the Jewish people throughout history is rooted in that cry. So it's one of the worst days, one of the worst possible parts of our history. So there certainly was a hiatus. So when was this hiatus? So a year after the Exodus from Egypt, the Jewish people sent spies to scout the land of Israel. We know what happened. The Meraglim, the spies returned. They slandered the land, instigating the people's refusal to go forward and conquer it. And as a result of this transgression, as a result of the sin, what did Hashem decree? And Herb, you mentioned this a little bit last week, that all men of that generation would have to die in the desert before the Jewish people would be allowed to enter the land. Anybody older than 20. So from the time of that event until shortly before Moshe's death, Hashem ceased communication with him on the profound level necessary to transmit the Torah. Not so clear, we'll see in a moment the source for this, not so clear if he didn't talk to him at all, but he certainly did not talk to him at the level that was necessary for the transmission of Torah. So let's take a look at the Gemara in Tainus. The Gemara, it's very short, I won't share my screen with you. The Gemara in Tanit, it's page 30b, says, Ad shelo kalu mitei midbar, lo haya dibor emoshe. God did not speak again to Moshe till all those of the desert died. As it says, and by the way, it says it's very clearly in the Torah itself, Deuteronomy chapter 2. Vayihi kasher tamo kal anshei hamelchama, lamut vayidaber Hashem elai. Moshe says, it was at this time that all the men of war among the people finished dying. Who's a man of war older than 20? We know that when the Jewish people are counted for war, only the ones that are older than 20 would go. So only these people, so the people, the men, Anshei HaMelchama, anyone that was older than 20, when they finished dying, then Vayidaber Hashem Elai. Then God spoke to me. Elai Hayo HaDibor. Only then, at that time, says the Gemara, did he speak to me. But Hashem did not talk to Moshe. Certainly not at such a high level that was necessary for the transmission of teaching the Torah to Moshe, that he would then teach the Jewish people. Certainly he would not do that during those 38 years. This is a little known fact. People don't realize this. Okay? But so this brings us to the last year of Moshe's life. Arvos Moav, or Aravot Moav. Plains of Moav. This is the second phase where Hashem dictated the written Torah to Moshe. Just before Moshe's death and the Jewish people's subsequent entrance into the land. Talmud tells us okay, before we get to that, somebody asked me a question. What was written on the tablets? Is not that the Torah until it's giving at Mount Sinai? How can one argue that it was only given 38 years later? So here's how I understand what the Gemara is teaching, okay? We have, you're asking about the written Torah, correct? Yes, about the written Torah, okay. Yeah, I mean, so the written Torah as we have it today, Chamisha Chumshi Torah, the five books of Moses, begins with the word Bereshit and ends with the word Yisrael. From Bereshit all the way to Yisrael. The discussion here tonight is, when were those written down? What's this week's Parsha? Who knows the name of this week's Parsha? Go ahead.
Emor.
Emor, okay. Good. Last week was Achim Moskidoshim, this week is Emor, okay? So when was Parshas Emor written down? Was it written down at Sinai? No, certainly not. During the 40 days after Sinai, meaning after the revelation, he only came down with the tablets. He didn't come down with the Sefer Torah. So we know he came down with the Luchos, the tablets, but he did not come down with the Torah itself, okay? He was taught Torah during those 40 days, and he maybe learned about things that Parshas Emor speaks about, but nothing was written down at that point. So was it written down at some point in the desert, either during the first year before the spies or in the last year in the plains of Moab? Or was nothing written down until, or maybe just some notes are written down, but the actual text of the Torah, the way we have it today, was only written down at the end of his life. So that's the machlokas, that's the argument between Rabbi Shimon Ben Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan that we just learned. So that's the written Torah. The tablets are the tablets. Moshe Rabbeinu breaks the first tablets, and then he does inscribe a second set of tablets, which we talked about last week. But the tablets are like more of an icon than anything else in terms of representing the moment that God, that the Jewish people came into being and that God spoke to them, etc. And obviously the second tablets is an icon, if you will, of forgiveness, and Hashem forgave them. But it's not the written Torah itself, not really. Also, I don't know, did Moshe Rabbeinu write down all the, yeah, I guess he did. He wrote down all the words of the Ten Commandments. So yeah, we either had the Torah from Bereshit all the way until the Torah was given plus the Ten Commandments, and we had that text, or, and again, that depends really, again, on Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, or we only had the text, and maybe you're pointing out something interesting, which is, even according to Rabbi Reish Lakish, who says nothing was written down until the Torah, until the last day of Moshe's life, that may be true, but what about the Ten Commandments? We certainly had a written memory of those. I agree. I hear that. I do hear that. That is all that's written, but I guess for that generation, that's their written Torah. I mean, they still had laws and things like that were from Hashem that they had to do. Does that answer your question? I can't hear you. You can press the space bar. Hold on.
When we celebrate Shavuot, we are celebrating the giving of the oral Torah up until Mount Sinai.
I think when we celebrate the Shavuot, we're celebrating the giving of the Torah at Sinai.
But not the written Torah.
In a way, Simchas Torah is more of a celebration of the written Torah, right? Because we've completed the five books and read them inside. Shavuot, in a way, is a celebration of, certainly of the oral Torah. Yeah. We read the Ten Commandments. It's interesting. You can argue, let there be a third holiday. The problem is that, if not for the fact that he broke the first Luchos, then I think that would be a holiday. When Moshe comes down with the Luchos, right? But he broke it, though. He broke on Shavuot Erev Tammuz, the 17th of Tammuz. So maybe that's why there's no Simcha associated with it. When he comes down with the Luchos finally on Yom Kippur, so there you have already it is a Yontif, it's a holiday. Interesting. Okay.
So why is it that we have 2 days of Shavuot then in that case?
We only have 2 days of Shavuot and outside of Israel because of a separate reason that has to do with calculating when Rosh Chodesh is, but not at all connected.
Okay.
Although there is discussion that if you do the math from when Hashem gave or when Hashem, you know, brought the Jews out of Mitzrayim, there, you know, there's discussion about why we, you know, we celebrate on the 2 days of Sivan that we do celebrate. It's for another time, though.
Well, thank you.
Sure. Joel, it's certainly possible. He's pretty thorough. Okay. All right. So here we have Arvos Moav. Arvos Moav. So the Gemara tells us in Talmud Bavli. So this is during the last year. And I'll read it to you very short. The Gemara is in Sota on 37b. Rabbi Shmuel says, and this might be familiar to you, by the way, because we're going to see a medrash that has very similar language. Klalos Nemro Besina. The general principles of Torah were taught at Sinai, meaning those 40 days, Hashem did not give Moshe Rabbeinu all the details of everything. Or another way to say it is, maybe he gave it to Moshe during the 40 days, but at Sinai, when he gave the Ten Commandments, let's say it like that. At Sinai, when the Ten Commandments were given, as we talked about last week, the Ten Commandments included 613. That was just in very general terms. It wasn't all the details of the Torah. So, klalos nemar b'Sinai, v'pratos be'ol moed, but the details were taught in the tent of meeting. That's according to Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Akiva says, no. Klalos v'pratos nemar b'Sinai. That actually Hashem gave the principles and the details at Sinai. And I would assume it also means during the 40 years, the 40 and 40 days. The Nishnu Ba'al Moed, they were repeated in the tent of meeting, Nishtalshu Ba'aras Moav, and they were reviewed again at the plains of Moav. So according to Rabbi Akiva, certainly, and I think that Rabbi Shmuel would agree with him, it's only a question of what is taught when, but the Torah was taught in three locations. There's a very famous expression in English. If you watched Shtisel, and one of the things that I loved about Shtisel was I listened to it in Hebrew, obviously, and I had on the subtitles in English. Okay, my Hebrew was good enough, but whoever was watching with me, whatever it was, also just in case I missed anything. So, and at one point I just had to laugh. Because at one point, one of the characters says, Ma'inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai. Have you ever heard that expression? Ma'inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai, which means, what does Shemitah have to do with Har Sinai? And in the subtitles, they wrote, what does it have to do with the price of tea? Oh, sorry, what does it have to do with the price of tea in China? That's what the English subtitle said. It's an expression, right? The English expression, what does it have to do with the price of tea in China? Which, I don't know, somebody can tell me what the origin of that expression is. It's probably something silly, right? But what does it have to do with what we're talking about? In Hebrew, the expression is, and I don't know if it's used just in like Haredi circles or not. I have to ask a friend of mine who's Israeli. But on the show, they did use it. And it said, when he was using that expression, what does it have to do with the price of tea in China? He says, Ma'in and Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai. So that question, Ma'in and Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai, it comes from a famous Rashi. It's really a Medrash, but Rashi quotes it in Parshas Behar, which we'll read in a few weeks. So there Rashi says that, because what does the Pasuk say? The verse says that that Hashem taught Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor and Har Sinai saying. And then it goes on to detail the laws of Shemitah, which are the years of the sabbatical year, the seventh year of a seven-year cycle, during which time it's prohibited to plant and to treat your fields. So the question that's asked is, you know, everything was taught at Har Sinai, wasn't it? Like, why does the Torah say that Hashem taught Shemitah at Har Sinai? And of course, it's not being taught till, you know, most of the way through Sefer Vayikra, the third book of the Torah. So that's Rashi's question. Ma'in Shemitah is Har Sinai. Sometimes Rashi asks a silent question, and sometimes Rashi asks questions very, very explicitly. So here Rashi says, Ma'in Shemitah is Har Sinai. What has the matter of the sabbatical year to do with Mount Sinai? So Rashi brings from a medrash. Ela mashmita nemru kaloseho pratoseo vitutukeo mi Sinai. Just like Shemitah, all the details. It's the general rules, the specific rules, the minute details, everything was given at our Sinai. Avkulon, so to all the mitzvos, nemru kaloseo vitutukeo mi Sinai. That is basically Rabbi Akiva's opinion, that everything was taught at Har Sinai. So on the one hand, nothing was really written down, like we said. Either it's written down piecemeal, not at Har Sinai, but later during, either in the Tent of Meeting, Ol Moed, or Arkos Moav, the Fields of Moav, or according to the other opinion, only all the way at the end, But at Sinai itself, certainly during the 40 days, I think last week when somebody asked, what did Moshe Rabbeinu learn during those 40 days? According to Rabbi Akiva, according to this Rashi, according to this Medrash, he's actually being taught everything, all the details at Har Sinai. There's a very lengthy piece of Ramban who takes major issue with this Rashi. And the Ramban writes a little bit differently. He says that what happened in Arvos Moav was that Moshe was commanded to teach and explain the Torah to the next generation. So again, however you're going to view it, the bottom line is there is a Yishtal Shalut, there's an evolution, if you will. There's a process of Moshe Rabbeinu teaching Torah, that's for sure. There's certainly a process. When did he learn everything? That's a discussion. But we know certainly that there was three places. One was in Ohel Moed, which was moving depending on where they were camped. And the other two was at Sane and in Arvos Moav, the plains of Moab.
So, Rabbi?
Yeah.
Are you saying that Moshe taught Torah Baal Peh just before he died? Or was it written? Or in detail? Because I understand if he did it by Baal Peh, then we would appreciate why we needed the Mishnah. But if it was all written down in detail, why would we need the Mishnah?
Good question. So the answer to your question is that Moshe Rabbeinu, during the 40 years in the desert, taught Torah Baal Peh. And then on the last day of his life, he wrote down the written Torah. Or he wrote down pieces of written Torah all along as they were taught to him and as he was instructed to write them down. And then in the last day of life, he sewed the pieces together. That again was the argument that we talked about earlier, the Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. But one way or another, either way, there are aspects of Torah that are not written. And when Hashem taught Moshe Torah, either at Sinai itself and during the first and last years of the 40 years, so there, Hashem is teaching Moshe all the detail to describe what's meant by the written Torah. So when you talk about Mishnah or Gemara, so that's obviously part of where more of Torah Shebaal Peh, more of that oral tradition, where oral Torah was written down.
So isn't where Gemara explains what the Mishnah says? Because like if you have something in the Mishnah, then the Gemara would expand on it, right?
Correct. So the Mishnah was written down by Rabbi Dahanasi. I don't have the years here in front of me, but it's around the Common Era, something like that. And the Gemara was written down 400 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and it's because, yeah, so the Mishnah is, there always was an oral tradition. That's the part that sometimes people have a hard time remembering, because Hashem Moshe himself was given an oral tradition during the first year and the 40th year that he was in the desert. So there's always an oral tradition. There's always oral explanation. By oral, I mean not written. The thing is that, and in Jewish history, it was always taught from father to son and within families and from rabbi to student. But nothing, the institution of schools did not happen until Rabbi Yeshua ben Gamla, who realized that Torah was being forgotten because parents were unavailable to teach Torah to their children, and only a select few of each generation were able to do so efficiently. And so therefore they created yeshivot, they created schools so that people can learn in a classroom setting, which is not ideal, but it's better than nothing. And then Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi wrote down Mishnah, which was like the first set of lecture notes of the oral Torah. It's not all the detail. And the Gemara is the final set, from the word Gemara, it's the final set of lecture notes of the oral Torah. But of course, there's thousands of commentaries and explanations on how we understand and how to learn even those books.
Okay.
This third teaching, we talked before about Arvos Moav, the plains of Moav. This third teaching, was not only a teaching. If you look in Devarim chapter 29, verse 13 and 14, and here I'll share my screen with you again, so you can look at it inside because it's very important. Verses. Here we go. Devarim chapter 29, verse 13 through 14, with the commentary of Rashi. The covenant sealed at Arvos Moav includes future generations of the Jewish people. This is a very famous passage. V'lo lo itchem levadchem anochi koreit et abrit hazot. It's not with you alone that I'm making this covenant ואת האלה הזאת, this oath. תהית אשר ישנו פה עמנו עומד היום לפני השם אלוקינו. I'm making a vote with those who are standing here today. ואת אשר איננו פה עמנו היום. And even those who are not here today. What does that mean not here today? They played hooky that day? What does that mean that they weren't there?
You know, with future generations.
So Rashi says, Afim doro ta'atidim liyot, even with future generations. This third repetition of the Torah, Avras Moav, is to strengthen the Jewish nation's commitment to the covenant made at Har Sinai, including those Jews of the future generations. This, by the way, this commitment to the covenant is reaffirmed by the Jewish people after Yeshua led them into the land of Israel. Devarim chapter 27, verse 11 through 26, and Devarim chapter 11, verse 29 through 31. I want to show you one more source before we call it a night, because this is a nice summary of what we've been talking about. This comes from the Mabit, the Beit Elohim. It's a nice summary of the period in which the Torah was related to Moshe by Hashem, which essentially was our area of study for tonight. So he says like this, it appears that the entire book of Bereshit and everything that was said to Moshe until the end of Book of Shemot was relayed between the first of Nisan while Moshe was in Egypt till the first of Nisan of the following year at Mount Sinai when the Mishkan was first erected. Which makes a lot of sense, right? We know from the Torah itself that when was the Mishkan? The English word for Mishkan is tabernacle, not a meaningful word. It's like basically a mini Beit HaMikdash, a mini temple. When was the Mishkan erected? When was it built by Moshe? On the first of Nisan. When did Moshe Rabbeinu start getting instructions from Hashem? When was the first mitzvah given to Moshe? HaChodesh Hazeh Lechem, the first Rosh Chodesh, by the way, don't forget Kiddush Levana tonight, okay? You haven't said it yet. So when was that? So you have a full year from the first of Nisan while Moshe is still in Egypt until the following year. And that's the whole book of Shemos, by the way, the whole book of Exodus. During that second Nisan, again, this is before the Meraglim, before the spies go out, the entire book of Ayikra was taught to him. And the book of Bamidbar was taught during the period beginning on Rosh Chodesh Iyar of that year, ending at the end of Tevet in the 40th year. And if it's true that Moshe did not receive any Torah communication during those 38 years, as we mentioned, then this book must have been taught between Rosh Chodesh Iyar and the 8th of Av of the second year, continuing from the 15th of Av of the 40th year until the end of Tevet. So he doesn't bring you all the sources, but because you have to look through the Torah at all the psukim to figure this out. But it's still a nice summary of if you want to know what the dates were. By the way, these dates, Tevet, Av, etc., are not the names. They're not the names used in the Torah. And the Torah says Chodesh Rishon, Chodesh Sheni, the first month, second month. We don't now. It's just months that we use to relate to it. And the book of Devarim was related from Rosh Chodesh Shavat until the 7th of Adar for a total of 37 days. By the way, when did Moshe Rabbeinu die? 7th of Adar. That's his yahrzeit. Okay? That's the yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu was on the 7th of Adar. Okay, so what we've talked about tonight is, we're continuing the history of revelation of when exactly Hashem spoke and what was taught. And here we have a better understanding. By the way, you know, it's possible to get this on your own, obviously, right? Certainly possible to get all this on your own. But because everything is there in the Torah, but it takes a lot of concentration to pay attention to it, you know, when it happens and to organize it all. And that's a little bit what the purpose of these classes is in terms of the history of the Torah. If anything is unclear, if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to take, questions. And I will unmute everybody to make it a little bit easier for you. Okay.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Rabbi, thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
I'm curious if you're able to hear me okay, because I'm talking very softly.
Yeah, it was. I'm hard of hearing, so I had a little bit of trouble hearing you.
Yeah, there was some, for me, there was a little bit of background noise. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I found it fine, Rabbi.
Thank you, Jerry.
Yeah, it was very informative. Thank you, Rabbi, as always.
It's my pleasure. I'm giving a class tomorrow night. I'm not sure what I'm talking about yet, but my wife suggests that I should speak about how to get our energy up. You know, now that, you know, we've kind of been doing this for like 3 months, so how do we keep our energy up and going? Like, how do we stay positive? So maybe that's what we'll talk about tomorrow night.
What time is that at, Rabbi?
8:30 tomorrow night.
8:30, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a wonderful night.
You too. Have a good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.